The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard, and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about the Linden Market Dental Center, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, John Rosen. John is the LA Kings insider. John, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Morning. My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure, John. Of course, we bring you on to talk about the LA Kings. The Jets wrap up their regular season. They wrap up their 2015-16 season with a game tonight in Los Angeles. The Kings currently in battle with the Anaheim Ducks for the division, to win the division in the Pacific. 2 points up on the Ducks. If the Kings take care of business tonight, they will have clinched the Pacific division, rendering Anaheim's game tomorrow evening completely moot. Do you get the impression that the Kings have a favorite first round opponent? Do you get the impression that they'd rather face, you know, either the Nashville Predators or the San Jose Sharks?
It's a pick your poison type thing. I think there are a couple factors. I think off the record, if you were to talk to the players, that they would probably prefer just Anaheim to play San Jose and let them get a highly emotional, supercharged All-California series out of the way. Not to say that a Kings Predators playoff series wouldn't be, you know, emotional, of course. I think that given the history of San Jose, Los Angeles, and given the fact that San Jose's window, given some of the ages of their core, might not be open in a couple of years the way that it is still open right now. But mostly because of that rivalry issue and mostly because of that, I think it would probably, you know, they wouldn't admit to it, but you know, the team probably would be looking for Nashville just a little bit more. But again, the Predators are a team as capable as any of pulling an upset, even if you want to call it an upset, given that there's very little space between the two teams' standings. And the Predators probably have the best collection of defensemen. I don't know about 1-6 because there's no Doughty or Carlson or you know, Brett Burns out there in Nashville, perhaps. Maybe Yossi right there just behind those groups. But, you know, I think Nashville with their defensive depth provides a unique set of circumstances that other teams don't have.
John, you just mentioned Drew Doughty, and we're certainly big fans of Drew Doughty's here, and he's having a Norris season right now. Whether he wins the Norris or not, I think he definitely deserves to win it. If he does win it, he's certainly going to be a finalist. When you look at this defense and the staple of those Los Angeles Kings teams that won the Stanley Cup, yeah, in addition to having complete teams, good in goal, was that group of defensemen. And so you're talking guys like Robin Regier and Slava Voynov and Rob Scuderi. When you look at this defense and the acquisitions that Dean Lombardi has made, whether that's bringing in a guy like Luke Shen, do you think that this defense is good enough to go far in the playoffs?
I think that's an excellent question. Yes, I do think they are good enough to go far in the playoffs, and I also would agree, too, that it's not quite up at the same level as recent Stanley Cup-winning Kings defenses. You know, that being said, you look at the Chicago Blackhawks last year, and they're getting through winning the Stanley Cup with, you know, a deep defensive pairing of rotation of guys like Trevor Van Riemsdyk. They had Kimmo Timonen at the end of his career and Kyle Komisky. And even this L.A. Kings team, from if you look back at the 2012-2013 season, they were still able to make a run all the way to the conference final when they had rookie year Jake Muzzin, who was pretty mistake-prone, and Keaton Ellerbe were kind of rotating in back and forth there, too. And they had more guys that just weren't as experienced on the back end. Going into this year, I think Dean was stung a little bit last year, Dean Lombardi, by the acquisition of Andre Sequeira last year, in which the Kings gave up among their top defensive prospects, Roland McEwen, as well as a first-round draft pick. So I think this year there was more restraint going into the year. The team did not have quite as many assets and did not want to deal the names that a lot of teams were asking for, guys like Nick Dowd, guys like Kevin Gravel, Adrian Kempe. They ultimately did end up trading Valentin Zhigkov as part of the Chris Versteeg trade. But when you look at it right now, And I'm not here to pick on Rob Scuderi because he's been very, very good at a big step up for Christian Ehrhoff from the minutes that he's given this team. But if you look at that defensive pair, if it is ending up as Scuderi and Shen, you know, there are some ways that, you know, some opponents can pick that apart. But still, those are experienced guys. Rob Scuderi has two, you know, championship rings. He's somebody that has that type of experience. That's something that Daryl Sutter covets. So they went out and they got experience with the limited assets they have. They were able to get at least upgrades back there on the bottom defense there. But they can win with this. It's just that it is not quite the same level defensively that they had in recent years.
You know, it's interesting, John, because the Kings, you know, kind of on that last point, the Kings have added to the roster LeCavalier, Shen, Versteeg, Lucic at the beginning, or in the offseason, excuse me. All those players, you know, aren't the fastest skaters. They kind of play into, for the most part, kind of the bigger, stronger, aside from Versteeg model. Do you have concerns at all? We talked about the defense a little bit there. Do you have concerns at all about playing a quicker team and then the possibility that may be an issue?
Not really. I think the Kings play fast. They're able to raise the pace, the cadence of their game when they get to the playoffs. And still, even though Marian Gaborik is out right now and is, I don't want to put any words attached them, you know, on his status, but he's probably not going to be ready at least the very, very start of the playoffs. So the Kings could start next Thursday, which might be one of the later teams to start. There are still players like Tanner Pearson is very fast. Trevor Lewis individually has a lot of speed. Even someone like Milan Lucic can get up and down the ice quickly from point A to point B. He's obviously not east-west type player. But this is a team that plays with a good pace, plays with a good cadence, and it's a team that has shown through the last 5 years just plays more in the offensive zone than any other team in the National Hockey League. It generates more offensive zone draws, and that's something that Daryl Sutter is looking for. But in terms of individual skill, they're probably not the Predators. They're not the Wild. They're not the Sharks. Some of those teams that maybe the Rangers, maybe that burn you getting up and down the ice, but they've showed that. If you look at some of their big playoff shifts from previous years, mm-hmm. they can play at a very, very good pace in the postseason.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is John Rosen talking about the Los Angeles Kings. The Jets, of course, in Los Angeles to end the season later on this evening, and the Kings gearing up for the upcoming NHL playoffs. John, you mentioned Marian Gaborik. No sign that he's going to be returning, you know, in the immediate future. Chris Versteeg has sort of been playing in a elevated role, probably from where the Kings expected when they traded for him from Carolina. How has he looked playing, in a more significant role for the Kings with Pearson and Kopitar?
He's been good. He's been up and down the lineup. He's playing in different roles. He's been scoring big goals. Really, all four of the goals that he's scored have just been getting into dirty areas in the crease, right around the crease, outside of the crease. Of the four goals that he scored since joining the team, three have come from either pure deflections or knocking down a puck out in front of the net and then burying his own rebound off of the deflection. So he's somebody that, despite his size, still goes and battles really hard in the corners and works guys deep. Tonight, we'll still probably end up seeing him in a little bit of a depth role alongside Kyle Clifford, Andy Andreoff. It's possible. It all depends kind of on how that Ducks game fares this afternoon. I have a feeling you might not see some lineup decisions fully made until that has taken place. But he's somebody that goes to the dirty areas. He was very good when he was alongside Pearson and Kopitar, and he's been good, too, alongside Andy Andreoff, who's been doing a good job dating his case for a place on the starting, not the starting lineup, but in the lineup when the playoffs do start next week.
John, Dustin Brown was such a big part of the two Kings teams that won the Stanley Cups. And last year he had a pretty bad season based on Dustin Brown's own standards. How has he been able to get back to the level that he was at, you know, 3 or 4 years ago?
Well, I don't think he's quite back there yet. It's an interesting case there because when you look at the possession stats, the ability to drive play is as good as he's ever had in the NHL. He's playing in the offensive zone. That north-south game, for the most part, is still there. And he is maybe a little bit different of a role than he had with the Kings 4 or 5 years ago, where he's much more now providing energy, providing that physical play, as always, the leadership that he provides. But scoring is down, from earlier in his career. His shooting percentage has dipped considerably over the last three seasons. At first, you thought it was an anomaly just because his other possession stats were quite good, but it just has never recovered to the point where, I believe in 18 goals in the 48 game. He played only 46 games in that 48 game lockout short season. So his shooting percentage was at an all-time high in his career back then. But still, he's somebody that is among those players on this Kings team that has been able to find that second gear come playoff time. When you talk about the Kings being a better team in the postseason than they have been in regular seasons, I mean, that's another one of the case studies that you can look at in Dustin Brown. They're going to need him. He plays a variety of roles. He's been getting more penalty killing time than he had maybe in the last year or two. So he's another player that I don't want to say there's a question mark just because of what he's won, what he gives you night in, night out. But you know, he's somebody that should he be able to increase that scoring from the regular season, that would be a big boon for this Kings team in the playoffs.
You know, John, we look at it, we ask about some of the possible flaws of the team. In reality, this team is maybe the favorite in the Western Conference, so you're trying to see if there are ways that they are beat. And you know, one thing I look at for this team is the opposition. You saw Anaheim doing it a bit on Thursday night, going at Jonathan Quick, trying to get him off of his game. Yeah, are you expecting that to happen, especially with some of these big physical teams, to try and get in his grill?
I think that's generally been always kind of been a constant team to try to rattle him a little bit, get him off his game. We saw that back earlier this week. And the best two-minute minor penalty that I think I've seen all season long was when Dan Hamm, he was on a puck that might have still been up for grabs a little bit. It was underneath one of Quick's pads. He was in the process of trying to cover it. Dan Hamm comes in and tries to jam it loose, and he was around four Kings when he did that. It did not end fortuitously for Dan Hamm. Quick took his stick out of his hand and smashed it against the far goalpost, which was entertaining. It was in the rivalry, in the heat of the moment. You know, it's something that over the course of 82 games you don't see very often, things like that. It was fun to watch. Yes, I think teams try to do that. I don't think it has gotten him off his game quite a bit. You saw San Jose really, especially late in the series 2 years ago, when they were falling, but you know, not falling behind, but having the challenges in the series that they had against the Kings in 2014. You saw a better presence there out there in front of the net as well. And so, you know, I think that Quick defends himself well. The players around him there are some bigger bodies, some physical guys that discourage activities like that. But just like any team in the playoffs, there are going to be bodies right there, and the team that gets those bodies and pucks to the net at the same time and generates a second, third opportunity to be the team that finds better success.
John, we'll let you go on this last question. If you go back to the beginning of January, the start of 2016, you know, just before the Kings made the trade for Shen and for Le Cavalier, you know, you look at them, they're sort of, you know, they're towards the bottom of all of the playoff teams in terms of goals for. Then you look at their first round opponents and, you know, their second round potential opponents in the Ducks and the Sharks, who are both right up at the top in goals for. You know, the Ducks scored 141 goals, the Sharks 137 since the new year. Do you have any concerns about the Kings' ability to get that crucial goal when they need it come playoff time?
No, I think that's a concern I have for some teams. I think the St. Louis Blues are a team that I have that concern with just a little bit. I think the Kings are fine. This is the best offensive team that the Kings have had since the 2009-10 season. Every recent playoff run that the team has had, I'm just going off of recent history, the team has been able to elevate its goal scoring in the playoffs. I don't know if that's just because over a seven-game series, when you have such strong possession numbers, that eventually you wear teams down and the pucks start going in for you. But this Kings team has been lifted by its power play. That power play hasn't been as consistent, really, over the last month as it was probably in January or February. But it's still a top-10 power play. The Kings never had that, other than a pretty good power play in 12-13. Again, when you can throw out guys in key situations like Anje Kopitar, Jeff Carter, Tyler Toffoli, who's had the first 30-goal season for this Kings team in 6 years. Other guys like go up and down the line of Tanner Pearson, Marian Gaborik, if he should return. And obviously the production that you generate blue line with Jake Muzzin and Drew Doughty. I mean, there are some high-level elite players there. There are Team Canada, World Cup of Hockey players there. So the skill is for the most part there. And I think that just this overall team systems play, even though it is aligned to the defensive, still generates a lot of offensive zone time. And the numbers start evening out in the playoffs as the Kings can probably jump from being a middle-of-the-pack offensive team right now into probably one of the better offensive teams over the course of seven games.
John Rosen is the LA Kings insider. He joins us from Los Angeles to discuss the Kings ahead of tonight's Kings-Jets season finale.
He's also the chosen Rosen.
The chosen Rosen, too.
The chosen one.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, guys. Always a lot of fun.
We'll talk soon. John. Take care. It's at the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. At the top of the hour, we will sit down and begin our Winnipeg Jets roundtable with Jeff Hamilton and Scott Billick joining us here in studio alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I am your host, Drew Mindell. Before then, we are going to look at some burning questions for the Canadian teams entering the offseason, non-Winnipeg Jets edition. We'll start out east with the Montreal Canadiens. Is a healthy Carey Price a cure-all after this season's struggles in Montreal, or are there deeper issues behind the return of Carey Price to the Habs' goal?
Well, certainly cures a few things, Drew, but I don't think it's a cure-all. I just don't think that team on the back end is good enough, especially another an older year of Andrei Markov, what happens there. And up front, Galchenyuk has had a nice year, really nice year. Where do they go up front? I think they need to improve there. Size-wise, depth-wise. So it helps, certainly helps, puts them in the playoff conversation. But I don't think it puts them into contender status.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious that when Carey Price went down with the injury the second time, Drew, the Montreal Canadiens struggled big time. But the degree in which they struggled showed you that it wasn't just Carey Price. As Richie mentioned, this defense is not a very good defense, and P.K. Subban is obviously one of the top defensemen in the NHL, but Andrei Markov has seen better days. Still a really good defenseman. Offensively, you put Andrei Markov on the power play, still very good, but we're talking about the types of defenses that you require to be a playoff team now. And, you know, they've made some acquisitions over the years, brought in guys like Tom Gilbert, Jeff Petrie, a guy like Beaulieu, I think, didn't take a step forward. Some of the younger defensemen they had to trade, a guy like Jared Tenorti. Some of the guys that they've drafted haven't filled in those roles. And, you know, again, the Montreal Canadiens have many skilled players. Richie mentions Galchenyuk. Max Pacioretty still had a pretty decent year. You know, Brendan Gallagher, I think that injury really hurt them earlier in the season. And Plekanec, he's a guy, you know, that... Is he a second-line center? Is he a first-line center? Well, obviously, with Galchenyuk now, he's a second-line center.
Which is better for them.
Which is better. You know, what's his future in Montreal, right? Long-term. I mean, he's a guy, again, too, that is approaching his mid-30s. This Montreal Canadiens team, Marc Bergevin, needs to go out, and he needs to make some moves, and he needs to improve the team. Another thing to be concerned about is that because the Montreal Canadiens have been a playoff team for so many years, they don't have very many Class A prospects coming up.
That's an excuse also. I mean, they've drafted exceptionally poorly over the past
Well, that's the thing, right, Rich? It's not only that they haven't drafted in the top five or top ten in I don't know how long.
But
that's the only one that comes to mind.
Right.
That was 2009.
You're right. They've been in the middle pack for a long time.
Right.
Absolutely. But they don't nail those picks.
Right.
Yeah. They've all more or less been relative busts.
And even their later draft picks. I mean, how many guys in this roster have they... They developed, I mean, Carey Price is a Bob Gainey draft pick years ago. I mean, they got Subban later than the first round, okay, and Galchenyuk was a good pick, but he was top five.
Well, that wasn't 2009, that was 2012.
Then, yeah, but exactly, and they got Gallagher later. But I'm saying, like, overall, and Pacioretty, but, I mean, over the course of a few years here, they really haven't drafted
Jared
well.
Jared Snorty was a first-round pick, if I'm not mistaken, or he was, or maybe second. Michael McCarron, I mean, it's maybe too soon to see what he's going to be.
He's not going to be an all-star, Drew.
No, I am. Moving to Ottawa, do the Senators have to change their playing style and commit to a better team defense to succeed? Yeah. And is Dave Cameron able to, as a coach, get the players to do so?
Well, I think that they do have to, Drew. Do I think Dave Cameron is able to? I don't know. So far hasn't been able to do that. One thing you have to understand here too, though, and I do think they need to play better defense, team defense. The team, they certainly have a style that they like to draft players in speed, skill. You know, they traded Shane Prince recently, the Islanders, but those kind of players who are able to create offense, but it is sometimes at the expense of size and defensive ability. So I think that's also an organizational thing. I don't want it to delay. I think Dave Cameron is primarily responsible for getting the players to buy in, but also the organization seems to draft the skill guys, which is, you know, fun to watch, but sometimes it leaves something to be desired in the back end.
Speaking of skill, Jeff Hamilton and Scott Billick are in the building.
That is skill, and skill personified, exactly. You don't have any follow-up to that?
Well, I mean,
have no clue what we're talking about, yes?
Ottawa Senators were recently in town here.
Yeah.
And
we're talking about the Maple Leafs. No, I'm kidding.
No, we weren't. When you talk about the Senators, and, you know, Rich and I were talking about this, you know, up in the press box, you look at the Senators and, you know, they're over 10 points out of the playoff picture right now. But you look at this team led by Erik Karlsson, a lot of skill on this team, a lot of young skill, you know, led by a guy like Mark Stone of Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And you kind of wonder, people forget they were just in the playoffs last year, but they don't really have, you know, high-end talent. They've kind of got three second lines, I would say. You know, with guys like Kyle Turris and Mika Zibanejad. I'm talking high-end elite talent, guys like Kane, Ovechkin, Tavares, stuff like that, right? And this defense, you know, they've got some youth there. A guy like Cody Ceci still young. And bringing in Phaneuf, that was a good trade. I think we all agreed.
What?
But, well,
for who?
Well, I thought it was a good trade for Ottawa.
Okay. I don't agree with you there.
But when you look at this team, it's middling to me. And I think that, you know, it depends on how certain players develop. A guy like Curtis Lazar hasn't had an immediate impact. So a lot of skill there. And, of course, they have to be better defensively. And even though Erik Karlsson is going to get 80 points every year, mm-hmm. is the supporting cast going to play the right way to get them in the playoffs? So, again, I don't know where the Ottawa Senators are heading. They're certainly not rebuilding. And they're certainly a team that's going to try to get back into the playoffs next year. But this year, they certainly took a step back, Drew.
Let's table the rest of the conversation for the offseason as the main event is set to begin. When we come back, we start our Winnipeg Jets end-of-season roundtable with both Scott Billick and Jeff Hamilton joining us in studio. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour of Jets talk ahead for you here on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Third and final hour here of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. It's a Winnipeg Jets end of season roundtable. And the opening segment is brought to you by the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life. Illegal Curve is thrilled to be participating in that fine event. Join IC on June the 5th in raising money for the Riverview Health Center's Alzheimer and Dementia Wards by cycling in the event or contributing to Team Illegal Curve. For more information about the Riverview Health Center Foundation Cycle on Life or to join Team Illegal Curve, visit rhcf.mb.ca. Send us a tweet at Illegal Curve. We'll send you additional information. We welcome back to the studio the Brain Trust. Jeff Hamilton, Scott Billick joined us in studio. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg are, of course, here as well. Gentlemen, the Winnipeg Jets 2015-16 season comes to an end later on this evening with a game against the Los Angeles Kings. Certainly a meaningless game for the Winnipeg Jets. The Kings may be battling for the Pacific Division title. We'll know by game time if it matters to them or not. We'll spend the first couple segments this hour looking back at the season on a chronological order, and then the last two we'll look at them by looking at the player positions, the forwards, and then the defense. You know, this Jets season got off to such a promising start. If you look back to the opening road trip where they go out through the Eastern United States and they, you know, are victorious in a number of difficult places to win games. Boston, there they win, and they go to New Jersey and they win. They lose to the Islanders, but things were good for the Winnipeg Jets at the start of the season. You know, they went out on that road trip and, you know, fans thought, you know, were feeling high that they were going to come back where they left off last year with the playoff berth, 8-4-1 through their first 13 games. You know, then they go to that, they go to Columbus on that Saturday night and they beat the Blue Jackets, and then they play back to back that Sunday evening in Montreal. No Carey Price in net for the Habs, and to me that was sort of where the season went off the rails. You know, with that humbling defeat to the Habs. Jeff, I'll start with you. Even though they came out with that 8-4-1 start, were there signs to you that this team wasn't that good, that this team was going to run into difficulties and then it was only a matter of time? Or did that the steep drop-off that occurred that started with that game in Montreal sort of come out of nowhere and surprise you?
I don't know. I mean, if 8-4-1 in the first 13 games, I think that's an indicator that things are working. I don't think they played the best hockey, but they were getting wins. And in this league, I think that's all that really matters was the victories. And, you know, even before the season, this was this optimism. Everyone who went from picking them dead last in the Central Division was at least picking them for, you know, fifth, fourth, you know, in this year. And so that 8-4-1, I mean, was it indicative of the way they were playing? I think there was bumps. But I think, like you said, November turned out to be the reality kind of hit that they kind of followed on for the rest of the season, really set the tone for the rest of the year. Disappointment, obviously, question marks in a number of different areas, and then the loss to Andrei Pavlik. I mean, at this point in the season, we're talking about Andrei Pavlik being kind of whether or not he should even be wearing a Jets uniform next season, but you know, I think that's a hit. I mean, he wasn't playing too bad in the beginning, and he's gone, and now you got to bring up a young guy, and you're battling with, you know, a goalie situation that early, and as I said, November was awful, so... I thought they were playing the way their record indicates, and I think that's what every team should be seen as, is what their record looks like. And at that point, I thought they were playing some decent hockey.
Scott?
I don't even know how to follow that. It was
a good answer. Was that the perfect answer?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. That, I remember that Toronto game. That was the one where Bermy took that penalty and then ended up scoring the game winner, was it?
That's right.
After the thing, yeah. But it's just like, I don't know, that month, yeah. Just it was a really bad month for them. And then I think, like Jeff said, it just set the tone.
Well, when you come off 8-4-1 and you look at the record, okay, 8-4-1 last year, they ended so well. You're feeling pretty good about it. So, I mean, were they emotionally fragile? Were they lack some confidence? I don't know. I mean, at that point in the season, you think that they're continuing from last year. You know, you don't have as many veterans as you did the season prior, but your core guys were still there. And for the most part, early in the year, even until about halfway point, they were injury free. Mm-hmm. So for this to kind of, you know, eventually drop off, I think was fairly unexpected, especially when it gets to the lack of overtime law. Like, you had so many regulation losses. I know we'll get into that later on, but I don't think it was foreseen necessarily that it was going to go this way.
Well, they ended up, they ended up, again, it seemed, playing to the competition, right? You know, they were in some big games, but then there was the blowout in Nashville, right? That game was bad, and they went on to lose the game, and they win a couple and lose one, win a couple. They didn't, you know, was it last night or 2 nights ago was the first time they won 3 games in a row? You know, it's hard to build a winning record when you win one, lose two, win two, maybe lose two or three, and go from there. So,
and you make some good points, Scott, and I don't think there is one game that you can point at and say that that's where the Jets started to really fall out of the playoff picture, because they haven't really been in the playoff picture for much of the season, especially prior to that slide in November. I think, if anything, the warning signs as far as where the Jets were heading was the amount of penalties that they were taking, the problems that they were having on special teams, the way they were playing at home, guys. I mean, the Jets were not a very good home team this year. And when you look at some of the way the Jets were playing in their own division, again, one of the main reasons why they were in the playoffs last year is because of how good they were in their division, beating Colorado 4 or 5 times. They picked up 3 wins in Chicago. And you're talking about, a fierce rivalry with the Minnesota Wild, all those one-goal games last year. So there were warning signs, and they weren't getting the secondary scoring. So that to me, it's a combination of so many factors. It's you can't just look at the goaltending or the defense or, you know, the third or fourth line. I think you have to look at everything at kind of a macro level. And I think the Winnipeg Jets this year, there's certainly room for improvement next year. And I think that there were definitely warning signs. You mentioned, Drew, that November slide, they never recovered from that. Winning three or four games, whatever it was in November, they never recovered. They never equaled that with a 9 or 10 win month, right, to kind of to make up for that.
Sure.
So, to me, the special teams were a huge factor in why the Jets aren't going to be in the playoffs this year. You can't be bottom two in penalty kill and power play when you don't have a high-powered offensive team that can make up with it the way you play 5-on-5, right? So I think certainly early on, Scott mentioned the 7-0 drubbing in Nashville. That was certainly a low point in the season. Well, but I don't necessarily know that you can point at that and say that that's where everything fell apart.
You look at that road trip. In addition, I mean, the 7-0 game, that was a Saturday night game. I mean, terrible performance, embarrassing. But you look at the two games earlier than that. I mean, on the Tuesday before that game, they go into Minnesota and they lose 5-3. Well, and then on the Thursday night, they go into Dallas and they lose 6-3. I mean, when you've given up in three games, 5 goals, 6 goals, and 7 goals, this isn't 1980s hockey. Those are numbers that are really astonishingly bad. And, was that sort of, red flags going off that this team that had such a commitment to team defense during the 2014-15 season, so much so that it so almost led them into the playoffs, can give up, 18 goals in three games, that, whoa, something is badly off the rails for this 2015-16 Winnipeg Jets team.
I agree. I mean, they didn't have a rallying point. They didn't have a rallying cry. I mean, the losses, the consecutive losses didn't translate the same way the injuries to the blue line the season before did. I mean, they didn't jump on that rallying point. I remember it's last year in Carolina, I remember being there and leaving the room, and I had this feeling about this team that was unlike anyone I'd had since I started covering this team. And I remember thinking to myself, you know what? There's a lot of swagger in this room. This team doesn't want to lose back. Like the common talking points at that time was this team doesn't want to lose two games in a row. They never, and they weren't. And then this season, I mean, we talked about that, that elusive three-game win streak that just showed up the other night. And the reality is, I mean, that's indicament of this season. Like this, that's just the, a statement right in itself on the inconsistencies. And I mean, we can go into penalty trouble, and I'm sure we will. But even that season, they took, if they weren't number one, they were in the top three of taking the most penalties that year, and they didn't have a problem with it. They would kill them off. They would take roughing penalties, tripping penalties, whatever it was, similar to ones we've seen this season, and they would kill them off. That was just the end of it.
I want to piggyback on what Jeff said there about a swagger that he saw on last year's team that he didn't see on this year's team. Does the lack, if you agree with Jeff's premise that there was sort of an absence of swagger this year, is the lack of an identity to this team sort of part of the reason for why that swagger might not be here?
It's interesting, right? I mean, all good teams kind of have that identity. And I think you heard, midway through the season that, these guys were still trying to find. I thought, I might be wrong on this, but I thought Paul Maurice even said, this team's still looking through identity. And it might have been December at that point. And it's just where did it go? This team was so good at the last half of last year. Yeah, a couple pieces were gone, but that core was still there of guys and their leadership. So where did that go? And why didn't it translate into this year? Was it because they put so much energy into the last half of last year that these guys were just gassed? I don't know. Maybe it's just they're not ready for. And maybe making the playoffs last year was, a good thing for the city, the fans, but maybe not a good thing for that team and the expectations that were put on it.
And there's a couple of things we talked about before about 8-4-1. One thing to look a little bit deeper is who they beat. You can look at it now because you're in the midst of it.
Sure.
And you think when they're winning the games, they're winning games. Boston, New Jersey, they beat Calgary, they beat Columbus, they beat Toronto. I mean, Minnesota, even a middling team, right? So you think about that when you're in it, they're winning. That's great. But when you take a step back, who they're beating might tell you a little bit more. So we talked about 8-4-1. a continuation of the season prior, but maybe looking a little deeper, there were some concerns and some numbers that might come back down.
Another There's only really two playoff teams in that 8-4-1 you mentioned. They beat the Rangers early, you know, in the, within the first four games of the season, and then they beat the Blackhawks at the end of October. Other than that, pretty much all those teams you mentioned are not playoff teams.
And then, but you look at something we talked about early in the year, is identity. You guys, you, Jeff and Scott both mentioned identity, and what is the identity? And Paul Maurice having a question about that. When the younger players came in, they became more skilled. You added Nealers, they became a more skilled team. But with youth and with a reliance on youth comes a need to have better commitment to defense and face-offs. Things that young players aren't good at. Face-offs, which the Jets are terrible at. Defensive hockey. And combine that with a defense that is inclined to play offensively, and what was the identity going to be with that mix? And they never seem to get it. Like, I still don't think they have an identity right now.
You know, let me. I want to go to break on that point. And as when we come back to you, Rich, you mentioned you still don't think they have an identity. I want to talk about that, looking at the rest of the season and how that's going to affect them going into the offseason. You're listening to the end of season Winnipeg Jets Roundtable. We're live on TSN 1290.
We're back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hit me with the horn, 20. Keep making noise. Keep making noise. Yeah.
20 minutes past 11 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, our end of season roundtable with both Jeff Hamilton and Scott Billick joining us in studio, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg as well. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We left off last segment with the question about the Winnipeg Jets' identity, and that, you know, at the midway point of the year, be it, you know, late November, the lack of an identity was really, you know, affecting the team's performance. You weren't certain what they were going to be on the ice. Here we stand on April 9th, game 82 of the regular season will take place tonight in Los Angeles. And the question of what is the Winnipeg Jets' identity is still one that exists. So as we left off with you, so, you know, as you sit here, April 9th, what is the Winnipeg Jets' identity? And the fact that this is still a question, how significant do you think that is entering into the offseason?
Well, I think it's a good question, and I think last year it was pretty obvious what the identity of this team was. This Jets team was a big, fast team that other teams were scared to play. And you heard other, you know, Jeff mentioned Carolina. Other teams would come into this building, and they wouldn't want to play the Jets because the Jets would hit you, they would outwork you, and they were a fast team. They had a lot of skill. And I think they lost that a lot with the Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian trade. Those two players were very physical. Rich was right about that. I didn't think they would miss it that much. You still have the physicality of Dustin Byfuglien. Guys, this year, Dustin Byfuglien had a big hit pretty much every single game, right? And that's what we've grown to expect out of Dustin Byfuglien. But they lost a little bit of that. And I think the identity of this team is young and skilled now. And the Jets are one of the youngest teams, and they're trending that way, especially if you bring up a guy like Kyle Connor, and especially if you have a 2016 first-round pick in your lineup. So I think this team is transitioned a little bit more from a veteran squad who is a little bit more physical, a little bit more in-your-face, to a skilled team. And you're seeing that with Nikolai Ehlers. You're seeing that with players like Marco Dano. So I think that the Jets right now are a little bit in between teams. And I think you're seeing that with the Minnesota Wild, actually. I think there are a lot of similarities, and I think that's why the Jets and Wild always seem to play such close games. I mean, players like Chris Thorburn and Anthony Peluso, like more grinding players, I think that, not that you can't have those guys on a skilled team, but I think that you're looking at a Jets team that is moving more towards that as opposed to a team that's maybe going to wear teams down a little bit down low, right? So I think that this team is beginning to form an identity. And you've also had a lot of turnover, a lot of injuries towards the end of the season. And I think the Jets team next year is certainly going to be a lot different than it is this year. There's players that need to be signed, whether that's Mark Scheifele or Jacob Trouba. But the Jets also are probably going to have to bring in a veteran defenseman, a veteran forward. Because you can't go into next season with another two rookies in the lineup when you already had four or five rookies in the lineup this year. I mean, you got to have some veteran depth there. So I think the identity of this team is moving towards more of a skilled group.
It would be so fascinating to be a fly on the wall of Paul Maurice's office, because when he came in, you know, midway through a couple of years ago and had the roster that he had and had to build it the next, and had a similar one the next season and got to work with it. And then, you know, over the summer, him and Kevin Cheveldayoff are talking about, you know, where they see the team going and younger and not signing players. And the idea of it is you got a completely different crew who now not only do you need to teach if you want to go that same identity. And I don't know if it was definitely a fast and physical identity, but it was quick on the puck. It didn't, I mean, Paul Maurice would say time after time after time last season, it didn't matter if you were a Matthew Perreault size or if you were Dustin Byfuglien size. He didn't expect the Matthew Perreault of the team to go out and run guys over, but the expectation was always to be on the puck and quick. And when you bring a couple of those guys, you know, Nick Ehlers, who had an incredible start to the season, when you bring in that added skill, that's a technique that you need to learn. Andrew Kopp comes out of university, hockey. He needs to learn about that, the quickness. He's kind of adjusted to that. Nick Patan, who we saw at the beginning, he falters off a little bit, goes to the A, comes back, and you've seen even improvements in his game on that element because they're teaching that same style in the Moose program. But it's a similar identity, but I felt that there's growing pains. There's that growing pains that I think fans maybe got excited about because they saw that added skill. They appreciated the work ethic last season, but they saw the added skill come in and expected that to just benefit the other aspects of the team. And I think we did see a real growing pains with learning that system, being hard on the puck and adjusting to that style of hockey.
Well, yeah, and I wonder if this team kind of lost in all that was they did get younger. There is, you know, more of a less mature aspect to the team. And like Jeff said, these guys got to, you know, but you have a team that has shifted a little bit to that skill game. Whereas in the Western Conference, we're always talking about these heavy games and stuff like you heard Claude Noel talk about there, Paul Maurice as well. I don't know if this team was built for the Central Division this year as opposed to they were last year, where they were able to grind out wins against teams because they could play that physical game and go in there and bang with them. And I think maybe you saw them going back to the schedule where they lost those four games all in the Central Division on that road trip. And, you know, my math's not very good, but that seems like a 12-point swing. And so when you can't keep up with these teams physically and they can just outgrind you, and I think, you know, Ehlers is a great player, don't get me wrong, but he's not, you know, going to be going into boards and banging all the time. And he does have that confidence to do that, but I don't think it's the same as having, you know, a bigger guy going down there and just and taking that role.
You have to stay consistent with the message. I mean, that's the thing, right? So if your identity last year was different than it is this season – well, your identity this season or next season better be pretty, close enough to what it was the season prior. Because if you change your identity again, then it's very difficult to build the team. So I mean, that's the idea of what's your vision for the squad. And if you're going to go that skill way, and that, then you have to make sure that you continue to go in that direction. And if you want to go back to the size, then again, like if you want to play that kind of game as you did last season, well, you've drafted a lot of small players and brought in a lot of small players here. So you have, I guess my point is your GM and coach have to be on the same page in terms of what the vision is. Because if the coach wants to play a certain way and isn't comfortable playing the way that with the players that the GM is providing, then there's an issue. And if the coach changes his mind a lot as to what he wants, the GM has to be confident enough in what he's doing that he's not changing all the time, because it's impossible. Like, look at L.A. Look at Chicago.
Sure.
I mean, the guys, St. Louis even, the guys who play in these teams have to fit the style. I mean, even Dallas this year, they bring in Oduya and Sharp. They want to play a fast style, score goals. L.A., LeCavalier, Shen, slower players, bigger guys, hard to move. That's the way it is. And you look at the Jets, well, they don't make a lot of moves, so it's harder to tell. But this offseason should be fairly telling in terms of what direction they want to take this and how they're going to be consistent or not with their identity.
You know, you look at the last number of months have obviously been, you know, write-offs in terms of the playoffs for this season. We know that they weren't going to be a playoff team. It became readily apparent, in January that this wasn't going to be a playoff team. Have you seen enough improvement from some of these guys who are getting their first, significant taste of NHL action, be it Joel Armia, be it, Andrew Kopp, who, obviously he's been there all year, but his role has improved, maybe Marco Dano since he came over from Chicago. Have you seen enough from these players to think that these guys are going to be, regular members of the Winnipeg Jets going forward, valuable members of the Winnipeg Jets going forward?
I think so. Guys that stick out in my mind is, it's not so much that I think that there's going to be guys that are going to stick around. I think we're going to see an interesting training camp. I think there's going to be a lot more questions, even more so than last season heading into this one, because look at the numbers. Look at the guys that are out. Look at the spots that are open. I mean, not some of those guys are vying for top six spots, top nine. I don't think a lot of those guys are vying for the fourth line spots. I think, you know, so they're, if you take that into consideration, the holes might are seem pretty small considering the number of guys that go in there. But I've seen great things from, you know, a guy like Joel Armia. I mean, he hasn't shocked anybody really, but he's played into the conversation. Nick Petan for the little time that he's been in there. JC Lapone, was they were praising him before he got injured. He still is going to be, you know, an option, you know, in that lineup. And, you know, I think it makes for an exciting opportunity in training camp. And I also think it also adds to the Moose pedigree. I mean, you have Brendan Lemieux coming in. I don't know. Is he an automatic Jet? Not in my opinion. I mean, he could be serviceable in the A for a season. And I just, overall, I mean, it's kind of just my overall point is it's going to be an interesting training camp, and that's what we've seen from these guys that are playing out the rest of the
There's going to be more training camp battles in this upcoming, you know, training camp in September than in previous years, you're saying, where there might be a battle for one spot, but not really. This year, there's going to be a number of different fights for roster spots.
Just less written down. There's going to be a lot of people written in pencil and less in pen.
Yeah, I think this one will be probably the best competition that we've seen in training camp just because of all the bodies that are here. But, you know, in terms of the young guys, you look at a guy like even Marco Dano. I mean, his time here hasn't been extensive yet, but Joel Armia, like these guys, I'm just looking at possession numbers right now. Like, all these guys are above average in possession numbers for this team, which is good on a team that, you know, it doesn't always have the puck all the time, right? Well, you know, so I think these guys coming in and playing a role where they are a possession player and maybe not so much getting on the scoring because they haven't as much, but I think these guys have been serviceable. Jeff used the word serviceable. Whether or not they contribute to the team getting better in the future, it's hard to say.
And guys, there's no doubt that the Jets have a lot of young skill coming through the system, and some of the players we mentioned aren't even Kyle Connor or whoever the Jets draft upcoming. You're talking about Armia, Dano. These are young players. Nick Petan, Brendan Lemieux. There are only 12 forward spots, right? And especially when you consider the players that are under one-way contracts, so there's only so many spots. And I mean, that bodes well for the Manitoba Moose, who are going to get some of these players. They've struggled this year, but You have to find the right mix. The bottom six didn't produce enough offense this year. And that's something that I think was partly attributable to the fact that they didn't have a guy like Elise Stempniak or maybe a Michael Frolik that they could put on the third line, right? So Chevy has some work to do in the offseason, and it's about finding that right mix. And as well, the defense. You know, Drew, you mentioned it. Early on in the season, the Jets were getting shelled, giving up five or six goals. I think what this defense needs more than anything is a shutdown defenseman. And whether that's Travis Hamonic or somebody else, the Jets have no shortage of offensive-minded defensemen, whether that's Tyler Myers, Buff, Tobias Enstrom, Jacob Trouba. They need to either put Trouba in more of that role or find someone on the free agent market to fill that role, because that's something I think the Jets need, especially in the Central Division, because you're going up against teams that have the Duncan Keiths, the Brent Seabrooks, the Shea Webbers, you know, on and on and on. It's such a competitive division. The Jets are going to have to make the right moves, and this team's going to be young. It's going to be young again next year, but I think the pieces are in place. It's good, and again, you know, it's too early to start predicting whether the Jets are going to make the playoffs last year. We have to see what happens in the offseason first.
Just a quick few things. I mean, they're going to have more competition, like you guys said, next year for the depth lines. I don't think that excuses the fact that they didn't bring in the depth players this year on one-year deals who were available to them, and they didn't do that. Like, they brought in Adam Party for $1 million, but didn't pay Lee Stempniak $1 million. I don't even care about Stempniak as much as a depth forward for $1 million. I would have... If the money wasn't there, fine. But if you brought in Party, then you had some money, and sure, you spent it poorly. In terms of the defenseman, I agree with Ezzy's point, but that's been a problem for 5 years, not one. So those are things that they're going to have the depth for sure. If you keep your draft picks, don't trade at all, and they have drafted well, and they have a good scouting staff, yeah, that's going to be a strength in terms of moving forward. But I don't think it excuses what's happened backwards. I mean, it's been 5 seasons. People are paying for tickets for 5 seasons, going to games, following the team for 5 seasons. That's an awful long time to wait to see the depth next year for a team that still, if they stay as they are today, is not going to, I don't think, make the playoffs.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to shift our focus to the forward group. Look back at the season. Look ahead to next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Yeah. 25 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, the comedy festival is on. The 7:15 p.m. show is sold out. 10 p.m., there are a few tickets available for John Wing, a legendary Canadian comedian. Be sure to check it out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Yes, Ezzy?
Shout out to our friend Benji Rothman, who was in the Winnipeg Comedy Festival. I didn't get a chance to go check it out, but apparently he was very good. Richie was there, so shout out to him.
Yes, all sorts of great comedy taking place at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, so be sure to check that out. We continue with our end-of-season Winnipeg Jets roundtable. Jeff Hamilton, Scott Billick, Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Gentlemen, we left off where we said we were going to talk about the forward group. And the forward group for the Winnipeg Jets, obviously you saw a bit of a changing of the guard this season with Andrew Ladd being shipped out to the Chicago Blackhawks just about the trade deadline. Brian Little goes down with that injury in Tampa Bay, where he's been out of the Jets lineup for the last number of months. And it's really become the Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler show. These guys have been absolutely dynamite. Mark Scheifele towards the top of the NHL in scoring overall since, you know, February, give or take. You know, are we just scratching the surface with Mark Scheifele, or is this sort of peak Mark Scheifele right now? You know, he's going to be 60 points this year. He's already at 60 points. You know, how much more does Mark Scheifele have in him? You know, is he a guy who can be a 75, 80 point guy, or is, you know, he going to more settle into that 65 point range going forward?
Whoa. I mean, maybe. Don't get me wrong. I definitely see the progress in this last little bit. I think he certainly owes Blake Wheeler a case of beer for turning him into, you know, the point producer that he's done. But that's not to take away all the credit from him. He, you know, one of the biggest things, you know, a guy like James Neal, for instance, you know, people used to give him all this flack because he played with Sidney Crosby and was getting all these goals. Well, guess what? Finishing in the NHL is a solid attribute for any player. And you know what? He's been able to do that. When I first saw Scheifele go on this tear, you know, impressive, absolutely. But I was a little bit cautious because, you know, garbage time, the games don't really mean anything. The pressure's, you know, out the window. This team's not making the playoffs. But he hasn't turned it off for this last little bit. But I really do think that we're going to need that consistency in him. And that's what makes you a 70, 80-point player is consistency. That's a point per game player if you're getting around 80 points. So that is like the definition of consistency. So I think, if you know, there's a lot to be excited about for him, but he's definitely, him and Blake Wheeler have had, you know, incredible ends this year, and Wheeler for the whole season, really.
Yeah, definitely agree with Jeff on that. I mean, it's like when the guys aren't gripping their sticks as hard when it comes to the pressures of,
by the way, Scott's gripping his stick hard right now.
That's weird. Yeah, but no. You know, when the guys aren't gripping their sticks as hard and when they're not playing for a playoff spot, right? And you're seeing this team is playing better, right? They're playing better with a younger lineup, with a bunch of, you know, AHL guys that have come in and some prospects and stuff like that, and all these emergency call-ups. You know, they're playing well. Some of these guys are playing well, and it's because I think there's no pressure on this team anymore to do anything. So, you know, since February when Scheifele's good, well, let's see if he can do it in October. Let's see if he can do it in November and keep up that kind of pace. Again, he wasn't with Wheeler, you know, for the season, and they haven't started the season together. So it'd be interesting to see how that's going to work, and how does Nick Ehlers fit in on that line and provide that other, you know, dangerous piece on the other side where these two can work together to try and produce some points.
Yeah, Scott, you make some good points. I think the Jets were having a lot of difficulty dealing with adversity earlier in the season, especially that horrible month of November where they lost all of those games on the road. And now that they're out of the playoff picture and they're really playing the role of spoiler, I think they're really enjoying that role. And when you talk about Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, I think it's going to be very difficult for Paul Maurice and the coaching staff to break those guys up. There's just too much skill. Those are the two most skilled players on the team. That's no disrespect to Brian Little. Brian Little's an excellent center. And I think even by splitting up Brian Little and Blake Wheeler, like they did with Andrew Ladd earlier in the season, I think that that might actually benefit the top six. And you have now two solid centers. Not that Mark Scheifele wasn't solid in his first 2 years, guys, but he's developed into a number one center. And if he's healthy, he easily gets 30 goals. He might score 35 goals. He might end up with 75 points, right? He's had an excellent finish to the season. Wheeler and Scheifele both with their long point streaks. And, I mean, these are good problems to have for Paul Maurice. You know that the top six is going to include Wheeler, Scheifele, Little, and Ehlers. As far as those other two guys in the top six, you know, we've seen Drew Stafford and Matthew Perreault be staples of that top six the last couple of years. It's really, to me, can guys like Marco Dano and Joel Armia, Nick Petan, Kyle Connor, maybe, can those guys push for those top six spots, right? And again, I think that's the one area where the Jets don't have any problems with front end talent. I mean, I tweeted this two nights ago during the Sharks game. I don't think Blake Wheeler's season is getting enough attention. I mean, Blake Wheeler is arguably the second best right winger in the NHL. And he's having a Hart Trophy-like season. Obviously, teams that don't make the playoffs, usually players on those teams don't get Hart consideration. But I think he's had that good of a season. I mean, of the 81 games, how many bad games has Blake Wheeler had? I would say none. So I think he deserves to have more credit. I think that's been the bright spot of this season have been the play of Scheifele and Wheeler. And, you know, you got to throw in the rookie season of Nikolaj Ehlers.
One thing we haven't yet, Scheifele's had a great year. There's really, you know, no question about that, and he's certainly exceeded my expectations for him. But and Blake Wheeler's had a great year, and he seems to be the presumptive captain here moving forward. Does there be any caution at all in terms of his tone lately? He seems to be a little bit more edgy, frustrated. We talk all about youth and development and.
His comment, yeah, specifically the one about the Hockey News says the Jets are going to win the Stanley Cup in 2020, and Blake Wheeler said, well, we'll see if I'm there
it's
for
that.
It's
not just that. I mean, that's one of them. It's not just that. I mean, has he not been a little bit more edgy in terms of his comments? I'm just wondering, you're assuming that's going to be your top line next year. You just have to make sure your top guys are fully on board with this long haul.
Well, let me ask you that. So is Blake Wheeler with a bit more of an edge, with a bit more of a leadership role, are you concerned about that? Are you concerned about the tone that he's taken as of late?
I'm only concerned about the tone, and Scott and Jeff are in the scrums that I'm not, but I'm just concerned about the tone from what I can tell. He doesn't seem like the happiest guy in the world right now.
No, I mean, he's probably the most frustrated guy in that locker room for sure, and he's been the most frustrated guy in that locker room even within last year and the years before that. I mean, last year was a break, obviously, in that frustration, but whether it's the comment about building for a Stanley Cup contender that the Hockey News predicted that year or it's, you know, I'm having a great season statistically-wise, but we're not even close to making the playoffs. This, you know, he called this the worst year of his career. This guy wants to win. I mean, he's edging on 30. He wants to be in the playoffs regularly. I mean, I think he's on board for the building of this team. He's a team player. He's a guy that, you know, leaves the game, and I think he's done a lot of maturity over his years when Winnipeg first got here. But at the same time, this guy wants to be in that conversation of teams that are making it year in and year out. And I mean, you want to see that frustration. You want to see him content. I mean, no. I mean, how could he be content? How could anyone in that locker room be content? So, I definitely, Richie, you're right. He's totally frustrated. He's the scrums have suggested that and have shown that. But you know, I think for the right reasons too.
And I think a guy positioning himself for the captaincy of a hockey team, you know, with Andrew Ladd, you didn't always see that kind of emotion, right? He was kind of more a reserved guy when it came to, you know, you'd get better quotes out of Wheeler, or when you're losing, Mark Stewart would be a guy who would be, you know, kind of getting upset and that sort of thing. And I think, you know, from a captain, you want to see that guy, because you get the sense, or at least fans get the sense, and even us in the media get the sense that this guy not only cares about the team, And not saying that Andrew Ladd didn't care about the team, but you see it. He vocalizes it. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. And then he goes out every night and he backs that up on the ice. And I think we've seen that for his duration here. But of course, I mean, Blake Wheeler wants to win. What a hockey player doesn't? And so, you know, he's committed his, you know, I forget what his contract was for, 7 years, was that it? Or whatever it was. But, you know, I think that at that point, you know,
he's got three more years left after this
season. Yeah, you know, so he committed to this team thinking that, hey, you know, this team could turn into the 2019 or whatever. They could turn into a contender, and that's not happening at the moment. And, yeah, I'd be frustrated too. I mean, this guy, it was the guy that was traded from the Boston Bruins when they won the Cup that year. So, you know, it's an interesting thing. I think he wants that. And I think, you know, and you want guys on a team that are going to be frustrated like that when they're losing.
So you don't have a problem, Ezzy, with anything that's been said right now by Blake Wheeler?
No, I don't have any problem with what he's saying. I can understand, you know, to Jeff's point, to Richie's point, and what Scott was saying. He's going to be happy with his personal production, but if that doesn't come with team success, then what does it actually mean, right? And Scott makes a good point. I mean, hockey players throughout their careers, what makes them good hockey players is that most of them win. And when you talk about the Winnipeg Jets, this has been a very disappointing season. And they've had some success towards the end of the year. But at the end of the day, they're going home early. They're going to be golfing next week, whereas the Nashville Predators and the Minnesota Wild are going to be in the first round of the playoffs, right? So I'm not surprised. I'm a big fan of Blake Wheeler, and I like how he shows emotion. Sometimes does he get a little bit too frustrated, or does he internalize it a little bit too much? Sure. But, you know, for all of the cliche quotes you get from players at the end of the games, I like how he speaks from the heart. So I have no problem with it.
I'm not criticizing him speaking from the heart. I'm just wondering, you know, how the frustration, the 3 years left. I mean, if you're not going to bring in some veterans here or ramp this up a little quicker, I'm not saying blow it up, but ramp it up a little quicker, bring the veterans, you know, how frustrated does he get? And the thing is, you know, Scott makes the point and Jeff makes a point about, and Ezzy too, about winning. You know, Blake Wheeler being traded, Scott mentioned being traded from that Boston team. You know, him and Mark Stewart being traded to Atlanta for Rich Peverly in that deal. That stings the player. I mean, he missed out on a cup run with a bunch of his teammates, the team that he came into the NHL with. I know he was drafted by Phoenix, now Arizona, but that he missed that chance. Dustin Bufflin re-ups in Winnipeg. Money was right, I think. Pretty fair. But he's won. He missed some cups with the Blackhawks, but he won a cup with the Blackhawks. A different perspective for a guy like that.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Jets defense this past season and going forward. You're listening to our end of season Winnipeg Jets roundtable live on TSN 1290. Final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Winnipeg Jets will not surrender, of course, but the year is going to come to an end. We continue with our end-of-season roundtable we've spoken about the forwards. Let's look at the defense and the goaltenders going forward. On October 1st next season, is the Winnipeg Jets starting goaltender Andre Pavlik, or is the Winnipeg Jets starting goaltender Connor Hellebuyck?
Jeff, well, the hard-hitting questions coming from Drew Mandel right now.
I think it's... if I had to guess at this point, I'd probably, unless something happens over the summer, I would probably say at the beginning might be Andre Pavlik. I mean, do I agree with that? Would I be surprised if Connor Hellebuyck was the number one goalie? No, I'm not favoring necessarily Andre Pavlik, and I don't think that you can. I don't know. I mean, do you give that much weight right away to a guy like Connor Hellebuyck? Is he ready for it? Probably. You know what? Actually, when you really do think about it, I don't mean to do a 180 here. Why not? Because he's going to be, you know, he's going to be doing, you know, his international play. He's going to get, that's going to determine a little bit. But I do think, I don't know. It's just such a difficult question to be able to predict. You won't be able to predict. It will all matter on, you know, really what happens this summer.
I don't even think, by the way, Jeff Paul Maurice knows the answer to that.
I don't think
anybody in the Jets organization knows the answer to that. I think the future of Michael Hutchinson is uncertain. And when you're going into next year, Connor Hellebuyck is obviously going to be part of the Jets next year.
Oh,
I think he's proven himself at the AHL level. He's proven himself at the American college level. And in his 26 games this year, he was very good. Struggled a little bit towards the end, but I think that some have called for Andre Pavlik to be traded. I think that Andre Pavlik deserves to be part of this team next year. And I think you're going into next year with a situation where whichever goaltender plays better early on in the season is going to get the majority of the starts.
I'm going to disagree with you. I don't know why does Andre Pavlik deserve to be a part of this team, because he's stuck. I just don't understand. He hasn't been good enough for this club. And I think that's just the bottom. Yes, he had that flash in the pan at the end of last year. And, it did help the Jets propel them into the playoffs, right? Those wins were helpful. But Connor Hellebuyck is too good for the AHL. He showed that he can play in the NHL. And I think at some point, when is this team going to give up on Andre Pavlik and start going with the better, or maybe he's not the better goaltender, but maybe the guy who is going to be your future.
By the way, I like that you're disagreeing with me, because you're fitting in with Drew and I who disagree twice a week here. So I like it. The gloves are off here. I think, Scott, if they decide to move on from Andre Pavlik, then you got to bring in a veteran goaltender, an established goaltender, because you can't...
As a backup, you're saying.
Right, and especially if you don't bring in Michael Hutchinson. But I would be a little bit nervous if you're going into next year with Connor Hellebuyck, a goaltender who's only played 26 games, and Michael Hutchinson, who's played less than 100 NHL games. So if you're going to move on from Andre Pavlik, and you're certainly not going to go with Connor Hellebuyck and Eric Comrie, and I'm a big fan of Eric Comrie's. I think if you look at his numbers in the AHL, it's not an indication of how good of a goaltender he is, because he can certainly be better, and he probably will be in the NHL sooner rather than later. But I think if you're not going to bring back Andre Pavlik next year, you got to have a veteran, established veteran, to back up Connor Hellebuyck. I agree with you. Connor Hellebuyck is definitely ready for full-time NHL duty.
I just don't know when. At what point do you not want to have? What point does this team want to move away from a below-average goalie?
But I think you're going to get that transition, right? I mean, that's why when the question is, who do you think starts game one? I think the leash is extremely short. It's going to be the goalie that rides it, and I think that you need... I don't know if you can put the pressure on a guy like Connor Hellebuyck and have Michael Hutchinson, who didn't really do much to make his case. Who knows if he'll be with this club next season. But Connor Hellebuck's the future. I think that's the only thing that really isn't debatable,
Yeah, I would agree with you guys. Connor Hellebuyck ought to be the at least 50% odds to start the first game next year. Yeah, he should be more, really. I think probably realistic with this brain trust in place that it'll be 50%. The only reason he didn't last the year is because they were worried about losing Michael Hutchinson on waivers. I'm not sure why that was as much of a worry, but it was. And he goes down, to get more time was the explanation, I believe. But in reality, he's sharing time with Comrie, so that didn't really seem to make a lot of sense. He'll be ready to take that next step. Pavlik's contract with the cut. See, I don't think they're going to buy him out.
Sure.
So, and I don't think he's going to be moved anywhere unless they eat salary, which I likely don't expect either. So you're probably looking at him playing a 50-50 role as it comes into the year. And then with play, it'll probably slowly move, if not quickly move, towards Connor Hellebuyck. That's how I likely see it going.
How much does it matter who's in the Winnipeg Jets net if the defense is the same going forward next season? If it's the same, they have the same sort of six guys, seven guys under contract. Jacob Trouba, of course, is an RFA, but it's you wouldn't expect anybody to change on the back end right now. If the Jets,
I don't know about that, Drew, but go into that
for the most part. How much does the goaltending matter if the defense isn't improved or isn't changed up?
Well, I kind of turn that question a little bit and say, how much does it matter to Connor Hellebuyck? Realistically, if you put a defense in front of him that's he's getting peppered with, yeah, it's one thing to get AHL shots, but to get lit up in the NHL constantly, this is your guy that you need to nurture. You need to make, you don't need to baby him. He's mentally strong. He's to a degree proven that he can play in this league, but you can't just throw him into the wolf pack and just hopefully he comes out unscathed. This defense needs to get better. They need to get better in front of him. And you can't have him hang out to dry on a defense that needs much improvement over this, into next year.
Well, team defense is, and you saw Hellebuyck, he came out was dominant. Really, it was really good. And then slowly you play with this team defense for a while, you're going to be left out to dry.
Right. So,
and that's a factor. And so we talk about earlier the youth of the team and the young players. Well, who does fit these holes next year? And does that equate to better team defense? Is there a buy-in? So there are a lot of questions. But yeah, if this team, like he might still provide better numbers than Pavlik with that same team defense. But I mean, are you looking at Carey Price numbers? Is anybody looking at Carey Price numbers with this team defense?
No, I don't think so. Yeah, no, I don't. I just think, you know, the Jets are going to have to make a trade then for a D guy. Like, I don't know if Josh Morrissey's ready yet. I mean, Jeff could probably speak better to that. He watched them down in the A all year. But I just don't think they don't have the same defensive depth on their prospect roster that they do, you know, maybe up on forward, right? And so when it comes, you have a guy coming in, and I don't know which one of you guys were talking about bringing in a shutdown defenseman, like a guy like Travis Hamonic. But, I mean, there's guys that also got to step up, too. Like, Jacob Trouba's got to have a better year than he did this year, right? Toby Enstrom, you know, there's a lot of debate about him, whether or not he's effective or not. Numbers say he is. People say he isn't. The eye test, whatever. I think, you know, this team does need to get better on the back end to give a guy like Connor Hellebuck a fair shot. But at the same time, I mean, I still think that Connor Hellebuck is that guy. That's going to, even if the defense is there, he's going to be better for this team.
A big thank you to Jeff Hamilton and Scott Billick for joining us at our end of season Winnipeg Jets roundtable. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. For Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Manitoba Moose hockey and Winnipeg Jets hockey coming up here on TSN 1290.